Hello, welcome to Brap Life. My name's Angel. Thank you so much for being here, and I really appreciate the fact that you're listening. This week's episode is with my friend Todd. He's somebody that I met in Arizona when I first got there, this time around at least, and randomly met up with a stranger from the internet, and he just turned out to be this really cool dude who rocked up on a Covey, and it was a really interesting looking bike, and so it was cool. We got to the end of our single track, and our end, where we wanted to stop, and then we sat and we talked, and I was like, dude, you've got to come on the podcast. Like, this is such a cool story. So I'm super excited for you guys to hear it. It's a little bit different. It's not the typical hard enduro or hair scramble. We're talking a little bit more about rally racing, which is cool because I didn't really know anything about it. I knew Baja and Dakar existed. But I didn't really know anything about the style of racing or anything like that. So it was cool to get a different perspective. It's really interesting to hear Todd's story, talking about coming from the Midwest to the Southwest and just his transition through life as he had dirt bikes be basically his therapy throughout his career. And then now into this portion of his life where he's, got all kinds of other stuff going on. So it's really cool. I'm super excited for you guys to hear it. I hope you enjoy, and I'll see you next week.
So first off, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. So this is Brap Life. This is where we talk about the stories behind the riders. So I'm great. I really appreciate I do appreciate you taking time out of your day to come over and talk, and this is going to be really cool. So I met Todd a month and a half ago already. It feels forever. And he answered a Facebook thing where I was just like, anybody want to go riding? And I just met up with this random stranger from the internet and went riding, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into. So,
isn't that how it normally is, though?
I mean, usually I meet people in real life first. Like, I meet people at races and then meet up with them after that. So there's not a whole lot of just randomly meet a stranger in the desert. So.
Especially a guy, right? Like Rick.
Yeah. My family was like, you're meeting with who? And I was like, I don't know, some guy. And they're like, where? And I was like, I don't know, out by the mountains. And they're like, just one dude. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay. I was like, this is how it is. It's fine. It'll be okay.
Yeah. No,
I'll either come back or I won't.
I think that's a good thing about the Facebook groups, is that. Mm-hmm. If I was some wacko, hopefully everybody'd speak up and be like, don't go out there with that guy, I wouldn't say our Facebook group is vetted, but we're all active in there, and I think even a lot of times people ask hey, is anybody gonna go riding, and the guys who run the group and stuff will shout out different people, hey, go ride with this guy or that guy, because they know the area. So that's the cool thing about it.
Yeah. So when you showed up that day, I was totally thrown off because of your bike. And I was like, what are we going to be doing? And you're like, hey, let's do single track. And I was like, okay. And that was gnarly for me. It was challenging for sure, but you rocked it on that bike, and that bike is huge.
It looks big. It looks big, but it performs like a dirt bike. That's the awesome thing about it.
Yeah, it's gigantic. What cc is it and everything?
So it's a Covey 450. It's a rally bike. It basically has an enduro engine with big gas tanks on it, so same suspension, a little less ground clearance on it, but it handles really well. So it's not in the weight realm of a adventure bike. It's just under 400 pounds. So whereas You know, the KTM or whatever 450 would be just under 300 pounds. So it's about 100 pounds more, but it carries 8 gallons of fuel. So it's a big difference. And it has a full rally tower with all your navigation stuff on it. So, yeah.
Well, that's really cool. Well, we'll get into why you have that bike here in a minute, Let's rewind and let's talk about how did you get into riding in the first place?
Yeah. So how do I summarize my life of riding? So I'm 41.
Start at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm 41 years old. And right now I live in Tucson. And I say I live in Tucson. I don't say I'm from Tucson because I've only been here 3 years. So I don't really feel that I can claim Tucson. But I love living here for the riding. So to back up, I'm from the Chicago area. And you think about like Chicago. Yeah, you're right. It's not a good place to grow up riding dirt bikes. And so me growing up riding dirt bikes, I had always wanted my own dirt bike. And in about fourth grade, I cut out a little picture of an XR80 and I put it up on my name tag at school on my desk. And every day I'd look at that thing and I was like, oh, I want that thing so bad. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. So it wasn't like my dad could just like get me dirt bikes whenever I'd want or anything like that. But fifth grade, my dad bought me my first dirt bike, XR80. And, I was just in love, man. I rode that thing everywhere. But the kid down the street had a YZ80. And if you know, the XR80 is like a trail bike, it's slow. And the kid down the street had the YZ80, the two stroke. And, within a year I was like, Dad, he's selling his bike. I want the YZ80. And we sold the four stroke and he got me the little ripping YZ80 and it was to the races from there. I like absolutely fell in love with riding dirt bikes. And so riding wasn't like I went out to a motocross track. We didn't have any local tracks. My family dynamic, I didn't have the ability. My dad didn't take me to the track. So riding was riding out from my house, out to the cornfields, out into the forest, and just exploring. And so I was known for that growing up. You know, I'd ride my dirt bike everywhere. And so fast forward into like high school, I continued riding. In college, I worked at a motorcycle shop. And so like all my life, I've always like been involved in motorcycles and dirt bikes and so college was more street bike oriented. The motorcycle shop was, the owner was a drag racer. And so for a little while, you know, I kind of got into drag racing, street bikes and with the shop. So that was really fun, but I still always had a dirt bike. So after college, I started my career. And so there was a little like 5-year gap where I really wasn't riding much other than street bikes and ended up getting married. And so between a career and being married, you know, I was a police officer. It was my career. And so as being a police officer, I would always see fatal accidents out on the street on motorcycles. Mm-hmm. And working at a motorcycle shop, everybody who came through the door had a story about somebody who had been killed on a motorcycle. And so, you know, that affected me, you know, once I got married and we wanted to have kids. And so I ended up like, I want to say about 2017, I sold my last street bike and I told my wife, I was like, okay, I'm done riding street bikes. I'll only ride dirt bikes from now on. But the kind of funny dynamic behind that is that I'm more of like a dual sport adventure, you know, ride from my house to the trail. So I am out on the road some, but you know, I try to remove that factor as much as possible from the already dangerous dynamic of riding motorcycles. So about 2017 or so, I think I like really focused on dirt bikes and got a WR450 and was a police officer at the time, and riding was my escape from a super stressful life. And and in about 2017, when my son was born, I bought my first new dirt bike, and that was a KTM 300 TPI. So that became my focus between taking care of an infant son and tinkering in the garage was like my life at that time. But you know, the fire of dirt bikes is just like always been in me. And and being a police officer, to go back to it a little bit, you know, that the toll that that takes on your brain and your personal life, it really affects you, you know. So all my friends growing up, you know, as soon as I became a police officer, I became, you know, Officer Kincaid. And you don't realize it. Everybody wants to like be like, oh, thank you so much for your service. But in your personal life, people you grew up with and stuff, they're like, you know, they kind of back off from you a little bit, because now that you're like, you know, like, you become a little bit of a stigma. And so friends kind of go away from you. You have the increased stress of the job of being a police officer and all the stuff that you see out on the street. You're trying to raise a young family. It's a lot on your shoulders as a young person, you know, as a young, young man, as a young anybody. And so dirt bikes, I would say, saved my life, because any free time I got, I was on my bike. So we worked 6 days on and had 3 days off. And like I told you, being in Illinois, we lived in like the absolute worst place in the world to be a dirt biker. And I would have to travel like 3 to 4 hours. So my 3 days off, I would be working all week away from my family. And then I'd get to my weekend and I would be like, see ya, hon. I'm going to go camp for the weekend. And I'd take off for 3 days and go up to Michigan or go to Wisconsin or down to Kentucky or anywhere I could to just like go be out in the wilderness and be riding my dirt bike. And so that was my, my escape. And, I had always, so being a cop, you're sitting in your patrol car a lot. And so you have a lot of free time. And you don't realize it, but those cops out there, I mean, they're busy, but like there's a lot of downtime where there's not shit popping off. And so you're sitting in your car and it's like, what are you going to do to fill your time? For me, it was escaping into YouTube and into moto YouTubers, you know, into Everride. I don't know if you've ever heard of Everride. But he is one of the grandfathers of moto vlogs. And I mean, his cinematography and the stories he would incorporate into the riding videos, and being in St. George, Utah, it's just absolutely epically beautiful. You know, I would escape my police car into his videos and just dream of going out west and just like escaping the Midwest and escaping my life of, you know, dealing with people's problems. I literally was like a marriage counselor. Like people would fight and call the police and I'd show up and be like, how can I fix your marriage in the next 15 minutes? So other people, like, you know, Itchy Boots. I started watching Itchy Boots at that time. I don't know if you know who she is either, but I mean, just the way that they could tell a story and travel, you know, I think you relate to that too, you know, being able to travel,
yeah.
you know, on a motorcycle and incorporating the motorcycle into it. It's like mm-hmm. the best of both worlds. And so,
yeah,
I'd always dreamt of somehow, some way, you know, incorporating motorcycles into making money.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I know I'm rambling on here, but
no, you're fine. You're fine.
My life story goes on. So yeah. So I was a cop for like 7 years mm-hmm. and I was like really getting burnt out. You know, this was, you know, through COVID,
mm-hmm.
the year of COVID and being a cop was probably the best year ever because nobody left their house. Nobody called the police. So again, it was like, it like fed into the whole, you know, you talk about like everything happening for a reason and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yep. I had nothing to do for that year. So like,
yeah.
you know, watching all this content and you know, trying to scheme a way to get myself into a different place. And so, yeah, you know, I took a trip out and multiple times out to Tyler's rallies and, you know, started meeting people. Tyler became a really good friend of mine. And, mm-hmm. You know, so I started just like putting myself out there to different content creators. And, you know, what's funny is you just realize is that they're just people like you are. And like, mm-hmm. you know, on YouTube, they'll end up having like hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And like, you know, people will almost like, you know, they're like become little celebrities in their own little niche.
Yeah.
Sport or whatever or niche topic mm-hmm. and you know, but what you if you just like reach out to these people, you know, most of the time you'll realize that they're down to earth and they'll take the time to respond. And so yeah, so I started reaching out to different people and went out and rode with Tyler. And so COVID was going on, I was getting tired of being a cop, it was affecting, you know, my home life. And my in-laws were going to be moving out to Tucson, and I have two little boys, which are the light of my world, light of my life, you know,
mm-hmm.
what I'm most proud of above all else are my two little boys. And, so keeping them near their grandparents, I mean, normally like grandparents are supposed to follow the grandchildren, but like we did the opposite, yeah. because they were going somewhere cooler than we were, and we're like, well, crap, let's go. So they were retiring to Tucson. Yeah. They were retiring to Tucson, and the housing market was way up. And so, you know,
mm-hmm.
we don't have a lot of money, but we were financially set, you know, because mm-hmm. police officers in Chicago make good money. And yeah, so it was a hard decision, but at the same time, you know, it was kind of like a roll the dice, you know, and we're still living in that aftermath. But at the time, you know, we did make the decision that, you know, let's sell the house, you know, we'll have a little bit of a cushion, mm-hmm. let's move out to Arizona. You know, my wife, thank God, she found a job right away. But what I did was, And again, thank God for my wife because she was so supportive of me. But I took the first year moving to Arizona as like a mm-hmm. decompression year, like where all I did was go ride my dirt bike, and 4 to 5 days a week, I was out. I would leave in the morning and go out hundreds of miles, and you know, because here in Arizona, we can plate pretty much everything, and it doesn't mm-hmm. matter if you're on a two-stroke or you're on a 450 motocross bike or whatever, a four-wheeler,
mm-hmm.
if you got a plate on it, pretty much the cops are gonna leave you alone. So that was brand new to me coming from Illinois, where you can't plate anything dirt bike wise. And so yeah, for a year I just decompressed riding dirt bikes, traveling around Arizona, going up to Pahrump, Nevada, going to Jimmy Lewis's riding school, going back to see Everride just to go ride in Utah. And so, yeah, that was the first year of being here in Arizona, and I came with a fleet of bikes. I had this dream that I would come out here to Arizona and start some kind of tour company, you know, like where I could do fly and ride vacations for people. And so that was my idea. But when I first got here, I wasn't really super motivated to do it. I was a little in my own world of like riding. I want to ride. Like I don't have any responsibilities. For the last 7 years of my life, I've missed every holiday, every birthday, you know, every anniversary. And now I get to
catch up on life. Yeah.
I got to be there for my boys. You know, I got to pick them up from school and take them to school. And, you know, I got to do all these things that I'd never done. And so it was amazing, you know, but then, you know, life sets in and the cushion starts to dry up and, you know, you got to get a job. And so then I ended up having to get a job. And so I started this, the tour company, you know, and started this website. And, you know, would get people in every couple weeks, you know, just random guys that would be out here on vacation and their families, you know, would be sitting by the pool or going shopping and he would want something to do for the day. So I would like arrange, you know, a whole thing where they would come in with nothing and I'd like dress them from head to toe, like, oh no, you know, you want to put the boots on the inside of the pants, that, you know, I would have to explain like the whole situation to them and I take these guys out. And yeah, so it's not easy to meet people's expectations on those types of, you know, fly and ride types of things, because people don't realize how gnarly Arizona is. And some people are just looking for scenic, sit on the seat, you know, look around. And
yeah,
so it's not super easy. So it wasn't super lucrative, so I got the job. And yeah, that's kind of like the history of me and dirt bikes and how I ended up out here in Arizona. So here we are about 3 years, you know, fast forwarded of being in Arizona. And I mean, it ain't all rainbows and butterflies, you know. Yeah, it's sunshine every day, but you know, life is hard. And you know, yeah, I get to ride out from my garage every day, but the economy out here in Arizona isn't as good as the Chicagoland area. Jobs don't pay as much. People would always say, oh, cost of living is going to be a lot less moving out west. And I'm like, you get out here. And I'm like, I don't, you know, gallon of gas is the same. Milk's the same. My utilities are the same. You know, yeah, you know, property taxes are less, but you get a lot less out here in Arizona than you would back in the Midwest. And so yeah, out here and just trying to make it work, you know, just trying to make it work. And yeah, so so my riding, you know, we go back to like talking about like dirt bike, like,
yeah,
what kind of riding or how did you get into the riding and stuff? And, you know, I explained like I was like more like the explorer, not necessarily going to the motocross track or racing or anything like that. Like for me, riding is like an escape. And you know, you're in your head and all that matters is like not eating shit, like, you know, like,
yes, exactly.
And although you're you know, exercising and you're out of breath and like you're trying not to eat crap, it's crazy because at the same time you're in like this zen moment where you're having like the best thoughts, the clearest thoughts that you've ever had. And you're able to like work out all those demons in your head and you're exercising. So you're getting like that physical activity. So yeah, like just like everything about dirt bikes, it's like, once it gets in your blood, it's there for good. And yeah. I know my boys are going to be the same way, because I'm, you know, they ride dirt bikes, but right now the focus is BMX and that foundation of riding BMX bikes.
Yeah.
You know, I know they're going to be the next generation of dirt bikers.
Yeah, we just had a couple episodes ago a guy who did BMX. Like he did dirt biking when he was younger, but he did BMX like pretty hardcore. And then he went back to dirt biking and now he does like hard enduro. But it was really cool when he was talking about it. BMX is something I always wanted to do. I never got into that sort of thing. I didn't do sports or anything like that growing up. But it was really cool to hear him talk about it and talk like the translation of skills. So that's really cool that you just said that. It just reminded me of him. So.
Yeah, and I'm just going because that's like the formula that's worked for other really good riders. And yeah, Chase Sexton is one that came from BMX. Cole Seeley was a BMXer. Yeah, a lot of them just and you can they always talk about it. The announcers and you know people, the media guys will always talk about the how fluid and smooth guys are who come from that BMX background. So and even I'll even shout out to my boy Mason Klein is right now Dakar started 2025 Dakar started yesterday. They should be doing the first leg of the race today. And Mason Klein is out there on a Covey for the Factory Covey team. So yeah, I just want to give a shout out. I'm super stoked. If you know anything about the rally world, Dakar is the race that everybody lives for the year or works towards for the year. And so yeah, it's a big deal. And so yeah, that's kind of where the Covey comes into play here. Is the whole riding, you know, the riding style and what, you know, I've always tried to accomplish on a bike. And how it's like meshed with this like racing community and like started this whole new world of like riding in my life. And again, I think the theme of our discussion has kind of been you know, everything happening for a reason, you know? And there's so many like things that had to fall in place to get the Covey here to the United States and for it to actually come to the market. It's what people like me have been asking for decades, and that is a mass-produced, affordable rally bike that could be street legal. And if you're looking at like a KTM for that, for a rally bike, I mean, you're talking if you can actually get one, because you have to get on a waiting list, and they only have like 100 that come to the States or something like that. I mean, you're talking in excess of 25 to 30 to 40 grand for the bike, whereas a Covey, about 8,500 to like 10 grand, I think is what they are. And they'll ship them to your door. And so there's this whole stigma behind Chinese bikes, you know, or just Chinese products in general. Anytime that comes up, there's that stigma. And so, and you know, like KTM riders, I mean, if you're not riding a KTM, if you're not rocking orange, wearing Climb, you know, like if you don't have the matching kit, the coolest thing, like the dirt bike community is like the quickest to be like, look at this squid, you know? And I hate that. I hate that about the whole community. The whole like image part of it, you know, if you're not driving a big pickup, you know, riding the KTM, you're just like you know, you're like a wannabe or whatever. But
I
anyways,
think that's a little bit different in the world that you're in than the world that I'm in, because I've never experienced anything like that,
really?
in like the hard enduro side and like the hair scrambles that I've been to and stuff. Like I mean, I've been to like a lot of like motocross, supercross stuff. That's kind of where I started in this world before I started riding. I was around that stuff. So I kind of saw some of that more like, I guess for lack of a better term, like elitist thought in that kind of realm.
For sure.
But doing more of the off-road stuff, like the hard enduro community is not like that at all. And like all of the, like I said, the off-road stuff that I've been to, the races, I mean, it's not rally races, so it's probably a little bit different, but it's just so welcoming no matter what. Like, I camp in my car. Nobody cares that I show up in my car, like, with my bike on the back. Like, they actually think it's really cool because a lot of people have never seen it. And, like, everybody's just super welcoming. Nobody cares what you're wearing. Nobody cares what you're riding. They might rag on you a little bit because, like, before the whole Cody Webb thing, if you had a Yamaha and you're trying to do hard enduro, people are like, what are you doing? But, yeah, I've actually never experienced that. So that's kind of crazy that you said that.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, my perspective is looking at the motocross, the Southern California community of motocross and supercross, you know.
Yeah, I said, world is kind of different.
yeah, for sure. And although I didn't race motocross, like, that was, like, I loved it. I watched it, you know, like, hardcore.
You're around it.
Yeah, I went to the race every time I could, anywhere it came around. And so I guess that's more where, like, the mismatched gear and, you know, like, not riding the newest, greatest. And I think that, you know, again, I'm going to bite my tongue here. Never mind.
You're fine.
I don't want to generalize people, but, like, people from California are just very judgmental, I guess.
Parts of California, yes.
And I'm from California. My family's from California, so I can talk crap about California. So I had always tinkered on bikes, like, not only road bikes, but I also, like, built bikes. I'm very mechanically inclined. You know, I was a pilot at one point. I'm not currently, certain, you know, active as a pilot, but, you know, so even as a little boy, I started working on stuff and grew up. And so I had always tried to make my bikes basically into the Cove. You know, I would put larger fuel tanks on them. I would take, like, motocross bikes, you know, put big fuel tanks on them, gear them down so that they could go a little faster. And as it progressed, I would actually, like, you know, I made, like, little homemade towers with, like, my navigation screens on it and stuff, because there was never any, like, rally bike or adventure bike that I liked. I liked dirt bikes, and I liked taking little dirt bikes on big adventures was my motto. And so I would load a dirt bike up with, like, saddlebags and my camping gear. And, you know, I would have, like, really good lighting on the front, and I would just go and park my bike on one side of Michigan and ride all the way to the other side of Michigan, you know, like, camping out along the way. And so that was always my type of riding. And about 5 years ago, Cove, or actually at the time it was GPX. And if you know GPX, like, Meg's Brap rides for GPX, and they are a Chinese brand bike, and they are brought to the U.S. by a distributor out of Utah called USA Motor Toys, and the owner of the company's name is Gary Goodwin. And so Gary Goodwin went through the whole process of finding a quality Chinese-made dirt bike and bringing it over here to the U.S. to try to compete with KTM and, like, get his foot in the door. And he's done a fantastic job of doing that and really changing the stigma behind Chinese dirt bikes. And I'm, you know, and for Meg's Brap to, like, go out and like, allow herself to be sponsored by GPX and ride those bikes, that was huge for them, because it was like somebody with some credibility who's going to beat the crap out of this thing to prove that that it's quality. And so about 5 years ago, GPX started touting that they were going to release a FSE 450 rally bike that was going to be around $9,000. And so I started following along, and I was like, wow, that'd be awesome. You know, and there were some other bikes out there a little bit. There's a bike called an AJP PR7 that is also a rally type bike that takes an old gas motor that they put into like a lot of different bikes, but AJP bought the rights to it and put it into a bike. And so I was looking at that one and really didn't know what I wanted. But then a couple years went by and they weren't really talking about it anymore. So I thought it kind of fell off. And so I move out to Arizona and I'm watching and they start coming out that now US Motor Toys is advertising this or marketing this bike as a Covey for 50 mm-hmm. and that they were going to start taking deposits within a year. And, you know, it really sparked my interest. And so as soon as they, you know, were going to take deposits for the bike and it was like, hey, these bikes are in production. They started like, you know, teasing us with photos from the factory, like, hey, you know, these bikes are coming. I threw yeah. down my deposit. And right as I threw down my deposit, within a couple of weeks, Gary is talking to Everride and is tapping mm-hmm. into Everride to create some content for the Covey, you know? And so Gary yeah. gives Tyler, Everride's name is, his name's Tyler, gave Tyler one of the pre-production models of the Covey. And so Tyler made a lot of content about the Covey and how, you know, if anybody, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there in the moto community that know about Tyler, and nobody can buy his opinion, and he'll tell it like yeah. it is. And so when he got the pre-production yeah. bike and took it out there and had nothing but rave reviews about it, I felt good about the deposit that I had put down. I don't even remember, I think it was about 6 months before the bike finally came, but it was just over a year ago now that the Covey's first came over here, and I had one of the first bikes in the first batch. And yeah, it was such an exciting day to have the Covey come to my house in the truck and it come down off the back of the truck. And yeah, it was like a, you know, kid on Christmas that day. So far the Covey has lived up to all my expectations. It is an amazing bike. For a company like Covey, anytime I've had anything with the bike, I can call Gary on the phone and be like, hey Gary, mm-hmm. you know, this is what's going on. And he will like ship the product out, like the replacement or like whatever issue I'm having, you'll no cost whatsoever. And it's like, what kind of like major manufacturer could you get on the phone with the owner and like tell him what you're facing and him just be like, all right, yeah, my guys are on it. They're going to ship you out the part. So yeah, I mean, I give a lot of props to Gary.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't with, especially with somebody like KTM. I had a friend who had all of these issues with his brand new KTM, and like he just kept having issue after issue after issue, and he was trying to like figure out what was going on with it. He just kept fouling plugs. Like, this dude knows bikes. Like, he's like, I don't know what the heck is going on. I think he went through like 17 plugs, and I had only known him for like 3 months at that point. So I was like, dude, that is so much. Yeah. And he couldn't get a hold of anybody. KTM didn't want to do anything. He talked to the USA side. He talked to like as high up as he could go, and nobody was doing anything. And it's a common issue, I guess, that like some of the newer KTMs had like really bad issues with fouling plugs. And yeah. I don't remember what he did to it. Something with the ECU, he changed out, and then he sold the bike and the new dude hasn't had any issues with it, but like, he was just like, I'm done. He went to Beta. Cause yeah. like, why are you going to stick with somebody if they wouldn't even help you? You know, it was a new bike.
Yeah. So, and you know, companies kind of grow so large, and I think that, you know, they forget about the little guy. But you know, Covey is really trying to make a name for themselves, and they, raced in the 2023 Dakar. They put three bikes in and all three bikes finished, which was a huge testament to the bike. You know, there are any manufacturer that goes into the car has problems, and a lot of them don't finish. So for three bikes to enter and three bikes to finish, last year was they sent a new 450EX. It's essentially the Gen 2 of my bike. Mm-hmm. And in the Gen 2, they have gone completely in-house with the motor. It's all completely like race spec, whereas mine, they marketed it and they produced it so that it could be street legal as well. So mm-hmm. and there's guys still racing the Gen 1 in Dakar. So to talk about, you know, where the Covey's taken me over the last mm-hmm. year, because we talk, you know, we kind of talked a lot about my history, and here I am talking about myself, and I don't.
That's the whole point of this. The whole point is so people can get to know you and your story. Yeah. So the whole idea behind all of this is to just talk dirt bikes and to hopefully inspire somebody. Somebody out there is going to hear your story and mm-hmm. they're going to find something that they resonate with. That happens in every single episode. I have had trail riders who don't race. I have had people who go out once a month if they're lucky to ride, and they have just as many people messaging me about how inspiring they are as the pros that I've had on here. Everybody has a story and everybody's story matters. So that's the whole thing, is just showing the diversity. Everybody comes from such a different background. And for you, being a police officer is something that's very different. We haven't had that on here. We've had military before, but we've never had first responders before. And so that's something that more people can hopefully relate to. And you know, that whole struggle, you were talking about taking that time to decompress. That's huge. That's part of that whole mindset. Like, we talk about mindset a lot and how you have to have a lot of resilience, and you have to be a little bit crazy to be on dirt bikes, because like, you have to like falling, because we all fall in the beginning. But it hardens your mindset, and that's something that you really had to kind of redo when you got out of, you know, that occupation. You had to really kind of figure it all out again, because that, I mean, I haven't done it, but I have a few friends who have, and there's some things that happen, you know, when you're on the job. You never talk about it, but it can be really, really difficult to deal with in a lot of different ways. So I think that speaks a lot to, you know, what you've been through and how dirt bikes really have brought you kind of, not really full circle, but you know, to a completely different place. And I think it's great. You seem like a very happy person.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
So let's talk about this last year with the Covey.
Yeah. So the Covey, I've said it a bunch, but the Covey really, not that the fire ever died, but like, it just really reinvigorated the fire in me to do something with dirt biking. And I didn't know what that was. Like, I honestly had no idea, because as I started to work and having to work full time out here and just trying to make it work, not making as much money, having to do extra stuff on the side just to make ends meet, mm-hmm. And dirt biking still being my release, still being my, you know, my escape. And mm-hmm. I'm in Arizona and life starts to get hard. You know, my father, who was in Illinois still at the time after we moved here, he fell ill, and he moved here so that we could take care of him. And so for the last year of his life, he was here in Arizona with us. And so, you know, we escaped Illinois to try to have this like amazing life. You know, I talked about the rainbows and butterflies, thinking that just the desert, it was going to be like the, you know, the fix to life. But no, you know, but hard times found us in Arizona as well. And so mm-hmm. I had my father with me, and unfortunately about a year after he had to come here for us to take care of him, he passed away. And so that was super difficult for me to lose my dad. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved him. And he was like, he's the one that gave me the first bike. He's the one that, although he mm-hmm. didn't take me to the motocross track or like, he did take me out riding, but he provided me that first bike and gave me the space and freedom to just go ride from my house. And, you know, mm-hmm. so like, just after he passed away, literally the weekend after he passed away, it was the week before Dakar. So, I mean, we're about a year and a month out from when that happened. I had started talking to Mason Klein, and because he was going to go race a Covey in Dakar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Everride is making content on Covey's for his channel and for Gary with Cove USA. And so, you know, I thought, you know what? I'm going to take these two and I'm going to bring two worlds together. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of talked about this earlier, but people are people. And I just reached out to both of them and I said, hey guys, I got this great idea. Why don't we like take Everride's cinematography and video making content skills and Mason Klein's writing and Covey and going to Dakar and bring them together, and you know, this could be amazing content, you know, like what do you guys think? And they were both on board. I was like, you know, I told my wife, like, hey honey, I'm going out to California next weekend.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And you know, so literally my dad had just passed away. And the next weekend, mm-hmm. it was like I had this opportunity to, you know, mm-hmm. go experience something. And it was like, what was I bringing to the table? You know, I really didn't. I was just the Yahoo who's like, hey, I got this idea, you know. But like, they let me come along for the ride, you know. And so, you know, I went mm-hmm. out to California and went and stayed at Mason's house with Tyler. And got to go mm-hmm. ride with Mason Klein. And so you talk about Mason Klein in Dakar, and he's pretty cool. But the younger mm-hmm. brother, no, he's a freaking stud. The younger brother's name is Carter Klein. And Carter yeah. Klein is a 20-year-old just absolute beast of a dirt bike rider. Uh-huh. And he was on the Baja 1000 team that won 2 years ago, and he was the youngest member of a Baja 1000 team to win. He went over to Arturo Salas's team this last year in Baja for the SCORE International mm-hmm. Series, and he was riding with Arturo on the 11X bike. And mm-hmm. they ended up winning the championship, and now they have the 1X for 2025. So anyways, I was like, again, like I was supposed to be like in mourning in this moment, and I was out there riding my dirt bike, a Covey, with mm-hmm. like some of the coolest people in, you know, in my like little world of dirt bikes I could ever. I was like grinning ear to ear, and like my yeah. face has only hurt that once before from smiling so hard, and that was when I got engaged. And I was literally, and I was like making content the whole time, so I had my, you know, my camera on and whatnot, and like I go back to that video and I listen to it, and I literally just sound like yeah. a little kid. I'm literally giggling in my helmet, like giggling, like I can't believe I'm at. Like, and yeah, and I mean, so it was so cool. It was just such a cool experience. And so you know, Everride interviewed him and did drone footage of him ripping his Covey through the mountains right outside, like right where he lives there. And it was awesome. It was a great experience. And so, you know, I walked away from that just like, man, you know, like dirt bikes are awesome. Like what else can we do? You know?
Yeah.
And so the year went on, and I'm like, okay, you know, I want to get some rides together. I want to like try to bring Rally and make it relevant here in Arizona, because we have the best area to ride, like such huge wide open spaces. And Rally racing is reading a road book. So you have a roll chart, either a digital or an actual roll chart, where you have your directions and you have a switch on your handlebar that rolls it. And so it's either digitally just, you know, swiping through the pages, or it's an actual piece of paper that's going from roll to roll. And it's leading you. And then you have, you know, a compass heading, and you have a couple of odometers. And so you're reading directions that say, like, you know, go on this cap heading, you know, this direction for this specific amount of time. And then once you, that time expires, there's going to be another direction and you need to be able to go this way. So that's what rally racing is that, like, it slows down the racing a little bit. It's supposed to like make it a little safer. Whereas like Baja racing, you're blind.
Yeah.
Although you do pre-run, the course can change all the time, you know, and you don't have any of those warnings about that. You're just like blitzing through, just like blind. Whereas rally racing, you have notes and they warn you about like different dangers and places you need to be aware of where you're going to be turning. And so it slows down the racing and it makes you have to think more while you're racing. So I wanted to like bring, you know, I wanted to do some like waypoint type riding, not just like group riding. I didn't want to like, have a big group come out and let's just go hit the trail. Like, you know, I've done that for years, you know, that's what I always do.
Yeah. But
I wanted to be able to be like, okay, here, let's build a track. Give me your email before you come and I'll send you the track. We all show up at the same place and we'll have like one meeting like halfway through. And then there's a, you know, a destination at the end, a restaurant or whatever in another town 100 miles away, and find your way there, you know, and we'll see you when you get there. It just makes it, you know, a little more fun and changes it up a little bit. So like I put out
an adventure.
Exactly. So I had like put out some feelers like, hey, you know, let's do some kind of event. And, you know, so it's hard to like get people to come out. I think, you know, a lot of times people are intimidated more than anything, and really they shouldn't be, because, you know, I'm not like amazing rider, you know. Yeah, I can ride, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not like top tier rider at all. And, you know, so it's hard to get people to come out because they're like, oh, you know, are these guys going to be racing around? Yeah, we're going to be racing around, but like, it doesn't matter, you know, like you go at your own speed. The whole idea is it's your own ride. Ride it your own way. Just get to the end and we'll have all the respect for you in the world, you know, but don't come out and say you're amazing and then fuck ass. but anyway, so I got like a handful of guys to come out and, you know, and I had no idea who these guys were. I thought they were a bunch of random guys. And I brought one of my buddies with me from down here in Tucson. And we went up to the Florence area. And I had this cool ride from Florence up to Superior through, like, I had done this big loop by myself. It was like 120 miles and some gnarly stuff. And I was like, okay, let's do this ride. And so these guys came out and we did the first half of the day up to Superior. And we get to lunch and stuff. And, you know, there's this guy, and he's like, hey, what do you think about racing in Baja? And I'm like, racing in Baja? Like, yeah, I'm down. Let's do it. And he's like, oh, and then he goes on to explain how, you know, he's raced down in Baja for like 17 years. And, you know, he's got this team where he's racing the Cove down there and they need another rider. So this was post San Felipe 250. So they had already done the San Felipe 250 and they were riding the ready to ride rentals. That is such a mouthful. Ready to ride rentals 805X Cove. And in the 250, they had an issue with the bike. And that's why my bike's down right now, for that exact issue that they had in the San Felipe 250. And unfortunately, in the first batch of the Covays, they sent them out. And there's a starter clutch bearing. And after the bike's been started like thousands of times, that starter clutch bearing, I guess, just isn't the springs in it aren't strong enough. And it fails. And so Covey knows about this. And when it happened to my bike, they sent me out the parts like that. And so, again, goes back to the, you know, the customer service and standing behind their product. But anyway, so in the San Felipe 250, they had that issue. So they had a DNF in that race. And it was like, and so they were down a rider. And they knew I had a Covey, so I would have a backup bike slash pre-runner. And they had seen me ride that day. So come to find out, it was actually more of a tryout, you know, like they were actually, they were seeing if I was going to be up to the task. And so, you know, they asked me to race and I told them, you know, I, you know, in my head, I'm thinking like, well, what about A, B, and C factor, you know? And I'm like, don't even question it. Just,
just do it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't. So, you know, naturally I would have been like, well, who's racing and when do I have to be there and all these other things. And it was like, I don't want to put all that, like, you know, on him. So I was just like, let's do it. And, you know, he kind of sold me on it. You know, he's like, oh, I got a house in San Felipe and, you know, we'll, you know, I'm thinking, oh, we're all riding down there together. You know, like my first question to him should have been, what is my financial contribution going to need to be to this? Because racing in Baja was expensive. So, so yeah, I said, but I always say this too. And I always bring this up because my wife's going to watch this. My next thing was like, I had to go ask the wife, you know, I had to go, I had to go get permission from her. But, you know, but what was really cool, and again, I say that I tell this story all the time, is like, I, you know, I went to say, I went to told my wife this whole thing. I was like, guess what, honey, you know, went ride with these guys today. And, you know, this guy, he runs this team and he wants me to come ride for him. And, you know, what do you think? And, you know, she was like, she was like, I would never, what do you think? I would never, you know, prevent you from going to do that. I know that that is like your dream. And, you know, when she says that that's your dream, it's like a boy coming from the Midwest who grew up riding dirt bikes. I have always watched all the documentaries, you know, I've always watched the, you know, From Dust to Glory, you know, on Any Given Sunday. And then more recently, they've made even more. There's this guy named, drawing a blank right now, but he does these series. He's like, these is
that
like
one guy.
These Baja series where he races down here. And so those were another one of the videos. They're called Into the Dust. And he does a great job at, you know, detailing racing in Baja on a dirt bike as somebody who's not really a lifetime racer. You know, it's like any guy, man's, or any, how do you say that? Any, like a regular person that could just go down to Baja, you know, not just a, like a hardcore racer. And so, you know, I had all these things in my head of Baja and it was always on my bucket list of going down there eventually and just riding myself and moto camping and that sort of thing. You know, I had always thought, Baja 1000 would be awesome, but you know, and that's not, I'm not really in that realm, so I would never be able to do it. So when these guys asked me, it was like my eyes and my ears perked up and I'm like, I'll do it. naive me, like I have no idea what I'm getting myself in for. And, you know, and that's the truth. So that's what the last year has been, was suddenly getting this opportunity to go down to Baja and race with these guys. And the guy who runs the 805X team, Dustin is his name, Dustin Davis. He's an awesome guy. He's fantastic. I call him the captain, because this guy is like, I mean, he's got a plan for like every situation and like he doesn't deviate from it. Like there's no emotion in it. It's just like business for him. And so that was like really reassuring for me, you know, to go down there with somebody who had experience and, you know, could tell me all the different steps and nuances to it. And now I feel like I'm comfortable that like I could go down there by myself, you know, but yeah, to have somebody like that with that experience to like offer to join their team. And it was such a huge honor. And, you know, I just, in a lot of that like imposter syndrome of being like, I'm not good enough to do it. Like what, you know, my wife would even speak, you know, motivation into me and, you know, like, hey, there's a reason why they asked you to ride down there. Like they rode with you. They would not chance. And what Dustin said in the beginning was to race in Baja, you have to be willing to take 20 grand and put it in a barrel in front of you and just light it up, because you put all that money and investment into it. And you go down there and you have a bike failure in the first like 100 miles of a 1,000-mile race, there's nothing you can do. So
yeah.
So yeah. So I don't know if we.
That's a totally different mindset than like a lot of other races. Like a lot of them, it's like a couple hundred bucks, and like, oh, something happens, your bike's out, and like that sucks. Like, but. I mean, even like in something like Romaniacs is like, I think it's like 2,500 or something like that to enter. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. When you do stuff like that and you have a bike failure or you get injured or something like that, I mean, it is, you're giving up a heck of a lot for it, you know, and that sucks. But yeah, no, go ahead and continue.
Yeah. So yeah, they invited me to come down and race, and so I had about, I want to say I had like 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks from the time they asked me until the race. And I had been riding, but not consistently. And this was midsummer, you know, like the heat of the summer. So I made it a point that like, okay, now it's training time. You know, I got 3 weeks to ride at least 3 to 4 days a week. And I even was like riding to my work, which is like 50 minutes north of us. And I would ride through the desert all the way up to my work. And I would show up just drenched in all my gear. And all my coworkers were like, wow, you're pretty hardcore, huh? And I'm like, I'm training. And it was cool because they all gave me respect for it. They're all like, wow, that's pretty hardcore. You're riding in the desert all the way up here? I'm like,
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. So I had to, you know, if I was going to be working full time, like I had to fit in long rides, because that's what creation down in Baja is all about. So I get my bike, I get it all prepped up, and I'm like, that's my realm, you know, working on the bikes, getting it like perfectly prepped. You know, that's kind of like what I pride myself on. And I've bought and sold dozens of bikes. I've built up bikes and just invested like literally thousands and thousands into them. The people will come along and buy them for me, and I always would make money off them, but people will come along and be like, wow, like this is a nice bike here. And like I'll have people like to this day, like 10 years after I sold them a bike, still contacting me and be like, this is my pride and joy, sending me pictures of it and stuff. So like so I love building up really cool stuff. So I like, you know, I'm like, oh, prep my bike, go down to Baja. So I prep it all up. I find a buddy who's willing to go down with me, because I'm coming to find out that, you know, oh yeah, well, there's a house, you have a house in San Felipe, but if we're going to be pre-running and everything, we got to be in Ensenada. So you need to get a place in Ensenada. And so, but then once you're in Ensenada, you have to drive 4 hours one way, like literally. So we're like 8 hours from like Tucson down to Ensenada. But I kid you not, we would drive like 4 hours back the other way into the middle of the peninsula to the desert just to start pre-running. And it's like, so the amount of like involvement in racing down there is just insane. The days are like really, really long. It's hot as could be. I'm allergic to bees. I'll tell you this whole thing. I'm allergic to bees. And I get down to Baja and they're like, oh, you're allergic to bees? You can't race in Baja if you're allergic to bees. Like, they're just saying like, not
there's
like you
so
can't.
Many
like,
bees down rule. Here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it ends up where I'm handing off the bike in the Baja 500 is like bee haven. We show up down there to stage there one day, and we pull in, and there's just swarms of bees all around the car. Just zzz. I'm like, I can't even get out here. I look over. There's like three people in this middle of this nowhere parking lot in the middle of the Baja Peninsula. And there's like one car over there. And I see this guy, and he's got like basically like almost like a bee's hat on. And he's going like this. And I'm like, yeah, there's lots of bees. And I'm like, wait a second. That's Mason. So out in the middle of nowhere in Baja, I go over to Mason. I'm like, what up, man? And we start shooting the shit. And he's like, yeah, my dad just got stung right now. We were just talking about how you can't be allergic to bees racing down here. And I'm like, well, I am. And so I ended up driving further down into a different area to start prepping. And then, I'm kind of jumping forward here, and I'll go back. But like when I had to hand the bike over, I had there were so many bees around me, and I was so toast. I was sitting there, and like literally they were just like swatting bees off my back as I'm like heaving. It was a nightmare.
Anyway,
so to go back to prepping the bike. So I prep my bike and I get down to Baja, and we drive hours out into the spot where Dustin is going to hand the bike off to me. And you know, we're basically doing like a little mock handover. Like we put a ribbon on a tree, we put the GPS track, you know, coordinates in the GPS, like this is where you need to be on race morning, you know, by 6 a.m. And I should be there anytime between like 7 and 10 a.m. Okay. So make sure you're here. And we're like, all right, cool. So let's do a little mock handover. We do that. He comes riding up with my bike. We do a little handover thing. And he's like, all right. So then he's giving us a little like, you know, like this is what it's going to be like in Baja. Okay. Here's the track. You can't come backwards on it. So I had a buddy with me who was going to ride with me, you know? And so, so we were like listening to all his instructions, and it's like, hey, you know, if we start going, you can't come back on it. You know, we're in the section that I was set to run is called, the summit, and it's up over a mountain pass. And so he has me riding the summit on a Cove, on an adventure bike. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, let's give it a go. And so, you know, we're out here and we take off, and this is full on pre-running Baja 500. So there's trophy trucks. And you're just like, oh. And trophy trucks, I mean, 1,000 horsepower, just absolute monsters. Yeah. It's the scariest thing you'll ever experience in your life. But my section gets to the bottom of the mountain, and then it's a mountain two-track shelf road all the way up the mountain. So once I start going, and if a trophy truck gets to me, I'm going. I can't get out of the way, you know, and I can't get back down. I can't stop. You can't get around me. So literally 5 minutes into the ride, I stop at the base of the mountain. I look back. I'm like, where's my buddy? Like, where's he at? Like, well, he's gone. Didn't see him again for the rest of the day. Turns out, within 5 minutes of getting on his bike, he's just, you know, trophy trucks are passing us through the sand, and he's just like, I'm out of my element. No way am I doing this. He cuts through the desert back to the highway and then goes to, you know, the meeting spot on the other side of the mountain. And so long story short, I pre-run on my bike. I'm the most inexperienced noob ever. I mean, it all comes down to bike setup, you know? I have a rock hard moose on the back of my bike with a rock hard tire, And if you know anything about riding dirt bikes in hard rocks, that's the worst setup. You want to have like a soft, pliable tire with a gummy compound with a soft mousse so you can grip onto the rocks. Well, I'm literally going up this mountain shelf road with 8 gallons of fuel on my 400 pound. Well, you add the 8 gallons of fuel, you're looking at close to like 470 pounds. Just completely wrong setup. It's hot as can be. I'm trying to look cool. So instead of wearing my like breathable gear, I want to wear my cool gear. I'm just sweating bullets. And
oh my God.
I mean, you know, so I start up this mountain and I'm struggling. And I'm thinking to myself, what did I get myself into? Like, I am not where I should be. This is not going to work out. Dustin's going to be like, thanks, but no thanks. We need somebody better. And so literally it was a fight almost for my life. You know, it felt like a fight for my life. If you've ever been in a situation where you're like heat exhaustion, you're at altitude, so you're out of breath, and you're struggling to pick up this heavy bike. And I mean, I absolutely struggled. I'll admit it here. I even posted this on my YouTube video, on my YouTube channel. And with the preface, hey, this is embarrassing for me. I don't put this out there, you know, lightly. Like, this is just a show, you know, the reality of like a noob coming down to Baja trying to pre-run. But anyways, I had to get off my bike and we're on this barren mountain in Mexico. There's no shade. There's a abandoned pickup truck with nothing. It's absolutely stripped. But the hood of the truck is like angled up and it's making a little bit of shade next to the truck. And I literally sat next to that thing, like literally about to pass out. I pull out my freaking GPS and I'm messaging the guys like, I don't think I'm going to make it down, guys. Like, and oh, you know, God. To give you a little bit of perspective, 2 years prior to this, they had three or five guys die in this section from heat exhaustion in the Baja 500. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. And so I knew this going into it. I knew like this section's overheat. As soon as you start to drop down on the mountain, you're down into the other side of the peninsula where it's like that you drop down into a dry lake bed and it's just insanely hot. And yeah, so I knew this going into it, like, hey, guys died here 2 years ago, you know? So I'm like in the shade, like, guys, I don't think I'm going to make it down. Like, I might need rescuing. And I'm like so embarrassed. Like, and this guy comes by on his dirt bike. I end up knowing this guy now. His name's Kevin Murphy. So he comes by on his dirt bike. He's got long flowing hair. He's like, you know, like older than me. He's like 45 years old. You know, he takes off his helmet. And he's like, you doing all right? It's the nicest guy in the world. Gives me his last, like, liter of water from his Camelback, gives me some electrolytes, and it's just like, you got it, man, like, you can do it. And I'm like, all right. And so he takes off down, he keeps on going, and so I'm like, all right, I'm already up over the top, I'm already downhill from here, you know. So I get down off the mountain, and then from there to the end of my section was about 40 miles, and it was 40 miles of like wide open, like 20 different options of lines you could take, deep sand. And I was just in heaven. Like, I was like flowing. Like, if you give me this, I could ride this all day. But in that moment and getting up over the mountain and in that challenge, they talk about Baja like it's an entity, you know, like they always talk about Baja, like it'll throw everything at you, like Baja tests you, you know, you have to earn Baja's respect. And like, that's how I felt. Like, I was like, that was Baja's admission fee. Like, that was, you know, Baja saying, if you want to be down here doing this, you're going to have to go through the crucible first. And so I got down and I was just, in heaven on cloud nine, you know, and I get to the end of the track. I see the sun's coming down. This was supposed to take me 3 hours. It took me over 6 hours, over 6 hours. Yeah. And, you know, I get over and I'm thinking Dustin's going to be like, thanks, man. You know, thanks for coming down. I hope you enjoyed it. I got to put somebody else in, you know, and I see him and he's got a big old smile on his face. And I come riding up and I'm all high fiving him, you know, and he's like, good job, man. He's like, there's a reason why I make people ride that section first, being their first time down here, because I need to see that one, they can do it. And two, that you're going to have a good attitude about it. And you're not, because he goes, the majority of the people that I throw through that section, they get right here to me and they're cussing me like, I can't believe you just had me do that. Like, that was effing, like, I don't want anything to do with that, you know? And he's like, the fact that you did it, you're smiling, you got a good attitude. He's like, I know you're a good fit. So I was like, awesome, man. Yeah. You know, and so it was reassuring, you know? I felt like, you know, it wasn't going to be up to the task.
You just almost died. So yeah.
No joke. One of the closest I've ever felt to being heat exhausted or heat stroke. And so, that's, you know, crazy. Just a, you know, so then going into the race, you know, I was second on the bike and it was the race bike. And so it was properly set up. It was Dustin's bike.
Yeah.
And so that what was supposed to take me 3 hours and it took me over six on that pre-run on race day, I did in about 2 hours and 50 minutes. And so, nice. You know, it just proved that, you know, it all came down to bike setup. And I mean, going into it, I was like, I just need another chance. Like, you know, wearing the proper gear, proper bike setup, not being so late in the day because it was so hot, you know, all these three factors. Mm-hmm. If I could just change one of them, you know, it would have been completely different. And that's what happened in the race. I, you know, we changed like three of the factors and it proved in the results. And so, you know, handed the bike off and then our bike ended up smoking a battery. When I handed it off to the guy, he ended up out in the middle of the desert and we had to go on a 3-hour recovery mission in the roughest terrain I've ever been in a street legal vehicle out to him. And we get out there and, you know, we're looking at the bike, it's just dead. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, battery. He's like, give it a try. He goes back, gets a battery, put it in there, bike fires right up. We're like, awesome. You know, so this, the third rider, his name's Paul Hart, Iron Man Paul Hart, badass from Northern California right now. He continued on and, you know, he was in the mix of the trophy trucks at that time. And then he handed it over to our third rider, who took it into the finish. Unfortunately, the last rider, he missed a waypoint and went down a off-limit road. And so we ended up getting a 20-minute penalty. And due to the battery and our 20-minute penalty, we went over time just barely. So we got a DNF on that race, which was unfortunate. So then it went on to the Baja 400. And so, yeah, we went down there and raced the Baja 400 as well. And that one went much better. We ended up winning that race and got first. And we had some bike issues as well. Just, I mean, the thing is, some of the riders on the team are super fast. And Mexico is really, really rough. And a heavy bike like the Covey, like when that fast rider really rides the bike hard, he'll basically self-destruct the bike. And so it's a bit of like a bike management, you know, like you have to know how to manage your bike still ride fast at the same time. And that was kind of why Dustin brought me onto the team, was just because, you know, I ride the Covey, and so I know how to ride the Covey, because there's a million guys out there who could hop on the bike and ride it. But it was just the fact that, you know, I knew the Covey. And so, yeah. So after, you know, I diagnosed the problem and I rode the hardest section in the Baja 500, Dustin was like, you know, you've earned your keep, man. You've earned your keep. You're part of the team. And so You know, we did good on the Baja 400, and that felt great for all those guys because we actually got the win. They gave me the bottle, so I got I got the bottle. Dustin, you know, got the trophy and the flag because, you know, obviously he's the team captain and whatnot. So, yeah, it was an amazing experience and just changed my world, like literally changed my world. Now, you know, since he invited me to join the team, Baja has been on my mind. Like trying to figure out how to get back down there has been on my mind. And so come the Baja 1000, he was still offering for me to be part of the team. But due to like the financial constraints and taking time off work and then taking time away from my family, there was just so many things, like to tell my wife I had to, you know, I'm going down to Baja for the third time this year. And I didn't never plan on going once. You know, it was just too much. It was too much. And, you know, unfortunately, the section that I was going to ride was going to be pretty much all highway. And it was just like way too much investment for me to do that. So I had to bow out and tell the guys that I wasn't going to be able to do it, which was heartbreaking. And to be honest, it was like when I told them that I couldn't do it, I like felt like I broke up with my girlfriend. Like I was like, like I was so emotional. It was so hard. And yeah, so they went down and they ended up getting second place in the Baja 1000, which made the team get first place in the Promoto Adventure class for the 2024 SCORE International series. So that's pretty cool. And there's an award ceremony. There's an award ceremony coming up in January or at the 18th, I think, the same night as, or same weekend as Supercross. And I'm sorry, Motocross. And Supercross, I'm getting them mistaken. But yeah, same weekend, and yeah, they're gonna get the, you know, the championship and the 800X plate for next year. But unfortunately, I don't think he's running next year. He's actually running Emma's. You know, Emma's running the Cove. You saw that, right?
Yep, I did see that. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, she's running it. Dustin's gonna be the captain for the team, and he's running an all girls team on a Cove. In I forget what that series is called. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's another desert racing series. Yeah.
Let's see if I can look it up, because now we're gonna need to.
Yeah.
Now I need to know. Hold on. She just posted about it, so this is like brand new information.
No doubt. So that's exciting. You know, he's like I said, Dustin is Captain Davis. And he's going to do great. He's going to do great.
It just says in San Felipe. So
yeah, I think that's the first race. The first race is down there in San Felipe. But it's a whole series.
Yeah, so it doesn't say the series, though, on
record. It might be record.
But, I don't know. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Record off-road series. Yeah. Ensenada. Okay. Yeah.
So,
she just announced that. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So that's where, you know, where the Cove took me this last year. And it, you know, Dustin came into the picture and Baja came into the picture and, you know, just everything, you know, it keeps building. And I just want to keep, you know, building from here. So I just revamped my, you know, my website, trying to promote my tours again out here in Southern Arizona. So, you know, anybody coming out?
Which I have to say, area? For answering my random Facebook post, you know, I gave very little information about me as a writer. I felt like I was like taking a huge chance going out there, but I felt like you took me on something it was just a tiny bit out of my skill set, but it was still good. And it was still a good time. Like we had fun. I had fun. I don't know if you had fun. But I had fun, and it was just, it was really cool. You were really great. You stopped, made sure that I made all the right turns and all of that. So I think that you're going to be really great with that. I think that's a really, really good thing for you, because you were just naturally good at it when we did it. So that was my first ride in Tucson, and I was like, I don't really know what I'm getting myself into. When we dropped in that first little bit after going through the fence, I was like, oh, this is really rocky. I was like, oh, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop. Okay. All right, cool. Now I've got a, I was like, am I going to be able to do this? And it was like 100 thoughts in my head in like that first probably quarter mile where I was just like, oh shit. Like, okay. And then you're like gone. So I was like, well, I'm definitely not going to try and keep up. So if I fall and get hurt, hopefully he turns around and comes back, which you totally did. It was super awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I knew you were up for it when we met. And the first two things you said to me were what was it? It was, I pick up my own bike and I like to follow. I was like, hi, I'm Todd. Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, I was just like so in my head about it. I was like, I don't really know what I'm getting myself into. So, yeah, but it was really cool, and that has probably been one of my favorite rides, even now that I've done. So it was really awesome. Cool. That was a fun little area. So
yeah, that is one of the gems of Tucson, but. The riding is endless in Southern Illinois. That's where I went to school. I don't know why I said Southern Illinois. Southern Arizona.
Yeah.
There's so much riding, and it's just absolutely endless. Right now, like when the rest of the country is just absolutely snowed in, and even in Northern Arizona, it's too cold to ride a lot of the time. So Southern Arizona is where it's at all winter long. And the riding in any direction is awesome. So there's, you know, terrain for everybody. And yeah, so anybody want to come out, it's just dirtbike.com, and it's dirt and then bike is BYK.com. And you can check it out on YouTube as well. If you just want to see some riding videos and what to expect out here in Southern Arizona, I got a lot of videos on there. Or if you're interested in seeing if the Covey is quality, got you know, my racing content on there where we really put the Covey to the test and abused it. And you know, the cool thing, you know, just to kind of, you know, wrap it all up, you know, the Covey is opening up so many doors and making this content on YouTube and just reaching out to people. Again, even these manufacturers are people. So all these aftermarket products and stuff, hey, check out my YouTube video. You want me to test out your new skid plate? How about you send it to me? I'll make some content and make some video for you. Sure, man. And so it's been awesome. It's been absolutely awesome. And I hope that continues. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, I can continue to, you know, make content. And that's kind of what, you know, I haven't really known where the direction of my YouTube channel is going to go or where it was going to go. It's kind of been a lot of Covey and riding around Tucson recently, but I don't know. I don't know. I want it to grow and I want it to be organic, and I'm not looking to like fight for views. It's just like, hey, you want to, you know, if you like to ride dirt bikes and you just want real stuff, then, you know, maybe think about subscribing.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's always great when you're organic and you're genuine about what it is that you like. I always talk about it on here because people are always afraid to come onto the podcast, and I always tell them your passion's going to shine through, and that's what people are going to relate to. And every person that's been on here, they just get this big smile when they're talking about like how they started riding and everything. And that's kind of like why I wanted to do it. Like, it's just, it's so fun to hear people's stories and to like see them talk about it. People light up, and it's just the coolest thing to me. But going back real quick to your
for having this platform to do that, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, of course. I did want to ask a couple quick questions. So in regards to like when you're getting ready for Baja, a lot of the times, because we work with, like, I typically talk to a lot of hard enduro riders. So we're talking about that kind of racing. There's a lot of calorie expenditure during a hard enduro race. They're maybe not as big as the Bajas, but they're pretty big races. What does nutrition and fitness typically look like when you're getting ready for a race like Baja?
Yeah, no doubt. It's a lot of circuit training and endurance. So cycling is huge. That's one way for me to get, you know, I'm still on two wheels. I'm still out in the wind and I'm keeping that heart rate up for an extended period of time. So just those long rides. There's nothing that replaces seat time when, and gym strength is super important, because what that does is when you get in those, oh shit situations and you have to, like, you know, muscle the bike out of the situation, you know, having those muscles to be able to do that are super important. Secondly, when you crash, not if you're going to crash, when you're going to crash, you need to be strong and flexible so that you don't just tear crap or hurt yourself. So the gym strength is important, but nothing replaces seat time, because you're going to use muscles in different ways on your bike than you could ever mimic in the gym with any kind of exercise. So mainly it's just putting in a lot of hours on the bike. And then as far as calories and expending calories while you're riding, no doubt. It's super important having, you know, the energy gels, and other snacks along the way. It is such a long race that you're getting off the bike in a pit, you know, for a minute or so, and just down a banana, you know, or an electrolyte drink, that sort of thing along the way. And then gels, even like while you're riding, you know, on a sit down section, because in Baja, there's some road sections where you might sit on the seat for 15, 20 minutes and you have time to, like, you know, pull something out of your pack because you have it ready and just, you know, down it. So it's super important. And you talk to these guys, all the guys I raced with are all Ironman Baja racers. So they're all just absolute badasses. And going down there, put it in a whole different perspective. Like, I used to always tout, like, say, you know, oh, you know, I have so much endurance, I can ride all these long hours and, you know, big miles on the bike. Totally different story when you get down there. These guys are on a whole nother level. Dustin's talking about, you know, training for, I think, 2026 or 2027, Baja 1000 that he's going to Ironman. And his training regimen is going to be walking the rim to rim to rim.
Yep.
Nonstop. Yeah. Yeah. Rim to rim to rim. Nonstop.
I want to run that.
Good luck. Let me know. I would love to follow along from a distance.
There's only like 50 some miles, right?
I'm not sure, but insane. I think he said it takes like 24 hours, like from rim to rim. So like it's like 48 to go back. It's just crazy. But yeah. So fitness is utmost important when it comes to riding, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm not in shape. It's a battle. It's a battle, you know, and especially as you get older and you're sitting at a desk, you're sitting in a car and a desk for work all day long. And then you try to go out and ride, you know, you really got to be disciplined. And that's where 2025, you know, is going to be different. You know, I need to get into shape. I went riding over the weekend, tried to hang with the Tucson Dirt Riders. And again, I almost like literally barely made it out of the situation. I was so naive thinking I could hang with those guys. Whew.
Yeah.
But so fitness 2025, it's going to be different.
Yeah. No, I have huge, huge goals for 2025. And I've talked about it a little bit on here. So I'm riding my first hard enduro this year. So I've been over the last couple months ramping up my fitness routine and everything. And I'm just like, now it's time. Like, I've got 4 months before my first one and I'm like freaking out a little bit because I don't feel like I'm prepared. But that ride that I did last weekend with the girls, they're all like hardcore riders. Emma was one of them. They're really, really good. I struggled so hard. And a lot of it is because I have, you know, we talked a little bit about mindset, but I am currently dealing with a little bit of PTSD after falling down the mountain that there will be dust. So I was on some of these, like, they're not huge, huge hills, but I was on some of them and I'm leaning into the mountain because I'm afraid to fall the other way now. And so now I have to get over that mindset because I know in this first hard enduro that I'm planning on doing, there are some sections that it's like, there's going to be a drop right there and you just have to deal with it. Like, I have to get over that. And that's just going to be, there's a lot of things that I need to work on, but that's one of the big, big things right now. So, it's getting okay with exposure again. Exactly. Exactly. And it's a lot. It's a lot. I have a lot of things to work on, my physical fitness, my mental fitness, all of it. But I think it's cool because I know a lot of people who are doing really big things in 2025 and who are kind of on the same journey. So it's kind of, it helps inspire me to know that other people are doing things that are similar.
Very cool. Very cool. I've watched some of your progress in a little bit of time that I've been friends with you on social media and whatnot, and you've made a lot of progress. So I give you props. I know.
Thank you.
You've been like a very motivated person, you know? So I think you're gonna do good things and big things in 2025.
Thank you. I have huge goals. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no reason that I should have the goals that I have so quickly, but I feel like I sat on the couch enough in my life and I'm just over that. Why not push? Like, why not now? Like, I'm about to be 35. Like, it's now or never. So,
yeah. Well, hey, you're doing it. You're doing it. Keep on doing it. I love it.
Thank you. One of the questions that I always ask on this podcast, and I'm really kind of excited to know your answer, is, if you could go anywhere in the world, all expenses paid, where would you want to go ride? No one ever has an answer right away.
Yeah, I know.
It's a big question.
If I could go anywhere and ride and there's so many factors. Like, the desert is like some of the best riding. Like, I don't like mud and I don't like cold, you know? Jeez, oh. You know what? Like, if I could right now, so I just leave my house, if I had the time off work and I just had the money and it didn't have the feeling bad leaving my family, I would just literally ride the whole peninsula of Baja. That's been a bucket list of mine. And I love the desert. Mm-hmm. I love the beach. I love warm weather. So Baja, I think, would be comfortable. I love the vibe down in Baja. You know, so yeah. And that's the thing. I am like a going riding last week and I rode somebody else's bike. And I'm such a creature of habit that I love setting up my own bike. I love my own equipment that I would want to be able to leave from my house. And so where could I go? I would probably ride down to Baja and ride all the way down to the tip. So that'd probably be my ideal ride.
That's awesome. I like that. I think that's new. I don't think we've had anybody say that before. Okay. We've had a lot of Iceland. A lot of like going to Romania for Romaniacs, stuff like that. Some like Argentina. I want to go everywhere. So like, I don't care. And that's part of the reason why my bike isn't lowered is because when I first got it, I wanted to learn how to ride it as is because I do want to travel. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I go somewhere else, I'm going to get a full size bike. So they're probably not going to have a lowered bike for me. So I'm going to have to figure it out. And that's fine for like everyday riding. But now that I'm starting to do hard enduro, I decided to lower the bike. So that's happening hopefully in the next couple weeks.
It's Sweet, sweet. Perfect. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's all the questions that I had for you. Did you have any shout outs or thank yous that you wanted to do? This is your time for it.
No, not necessarily. Thanks to AXP. I don't know that they would ever watch this, but AXP just sent me a skid plate to go test. So I got to give them shout outs on any kind of social media that I'm going to be doing. Uncle Wang.
Yeah.
Uncle Wang makes products for Covays, and Uncle Wang's been sending me products to test and make videos for and whatnot. So Uncle Wang, straight out of China, super rad dude, motorcycle enthusiast like anybody else. And yeah, you know, awesome, awesome guys, you know. And then just the 805X guys, I just have to give a huge shout out to Dustin for exposing me to this new world of Baja racing. It's a little bit like a drug, like they all say, and I am all in. Like, I am an addict, and yeah, hopefully I can, you know, be able to take care of some of those cravings in 2025 and get back down there. I don't know how it's going to work out. But yeah, the whole 805X team, Paul Hart, Mark Betchel was our fast guy, and he lives up in Phoenix as well and is an absolute legend. He is a legit dude and absolutely love him. So just Dustin for introducing me to that whole world, because it's just, it's created, the Covey created a fire. Baja has created even more of a fire for dirt biking. And so I'm just excited for where 2025 is going to take us.
That's awesome. Oh, I'm so excited to see. Now that I know you and I can follow your social media, like, that's going to be cool to kind of see what you get up to.
I can't wait to see the hard enduro stuff come. And I know it's just a matter of time before we ride together again, you know.
Yes.
You're going to be right up there. And the Florence Superior area is amazing riding. So hopefully that can be a good, like, in between point. And then when it gets hot in the summer, I'm going to come up and see you up there and ride.
Heck yes. I'm so excited. By then I will know how to get around up there. So
yeah.
I will, awesome. By then I'll be able to show you around maybe, but right. You might still be better than
you. Yeah, out. For you sure. Stuff, and then you show me around.
Yep. Yeah, cool. Exactly. Okay, cool. Well, thank you again for joining. I really do appreciate your time. I know this is a little bit longer than I originally said, but it was really cool to hear your story. And I think I don't think there was anything that you could have shortened on it. Like, I think that everything was really relevant. So that was really cool. I learned a lot because I didn't know anything about rally racing before. I knew it existed, but I learned a heck of a lot about it. So
I'm new to it as well. I just want to do more.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you will. I know you will. So, well, thank you again. And we will talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'll see you on the next one.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.